brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and Straight Talk with the Guys in the Community.
Soft Rep Radio, on time, on target. It's funny, I was every now and again I mention the theme song, and I think this is Andrew's first time hearing it live. So my friend John Burns did it, as I've mentioned before, and I was like very Top Gun-esque, and I think everybody notices right away. Because I'll be honest, I said to John, I was like, make it sound pretty much like the Top Gun anthem, but enough that we don't get like a copyright dispute, so... Yeah, how's everything going, man? This is a busy day for you. This is election day.
Yeah, it's election day. So I did 3 hours of my radio program. I'm gonna work with you guys here on this because we have a lot to get to with a vet ride in our broadcast here in Times Square. Going to do some CRTV tonight. Go back and do 9 to 1 a.m. and then they want me on CRTV back again first thing in the morning. And they were like, "What kind of guest do you want?" I'm like, "Whoever you think is available," because I mean, some people are not going to want to be talking win, lose, or draw tomorrow. So you know,
that's crazy, man. Are you pounding like 10 Red Bulls tonight?
If Red Bull is a beer, yeah. Because you know, at some point we're just gonna have beers under the table. It's you know, it's radio. It's not like we're really on. Well, Breitbart's going to be carrying the feed, but whenever the camera's not on me or David Webb, I'm sure there'll be an alcoholic beverage there.
I remember, and by the way, I mean, I feel like a lot of the audience knows who you are, of course, but Andrew Wilkow, host of the Wilkow Majority on SiriusXM Patriot, and Wilkow on CRTV, WilkowMajority.com. And by the way, I really do appreciate you coming in, man.
No,
a hotel, you could be napping in your hotel right now.
Well, so. But this, forget the election for a second. This Veterans Day event that we're doing started literally with me saying to a guy who owns a bar in Times Square, which, by the way, has a Will Cal burger and a Brandon Webb sandwich that's kind of become our home away from home.
Yep.
You know, we just started this by saying we should broadcast from here. You know, you're two blocks off the parade route. It's Times Square. It's Veterans Day. And it's morphed into the vet ride and then all of the money that we've been raising for the charities that are really, I think the only way to describe them is grassroots charities, right? If you're a Wounded Warrior Project, you've got corporate sponsors. We had J.W. Cortez from the Semper Fi Fund last year, and you know we added him and Semper Fi Fund late in the game, so it was only a few hundred dollars they raised in the bar, but they get their money from the Johnson & Johnson Family Trust. You know, they're not. Tip jar charities that are, you know, doing events at VFW halls, all the charities that we're working with this year, and we made a decision this year not to do branch specific charities, are grassroots charities. So one of them is Operation Chill Out. It's a New Jersey charity that deals with homeless veterans. And some of the guys are Vietnam veterans. And believe it or not, to this day, and Jack, it probably wouldn't surprise you at all, that there are still homeless veterans from the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't been many of them haven't been homeless all this time, but have fallen into homelessness. And there are veterans from the current conflicts that are homeless. And this organization, Ray Chmielewski, the executive director, told me it takes $200 to get a veteran off the streets. And last year, I think we handed them $7,000. You know, just in the bar.
It was packed last year.
Yeah. And the NYPD has been so great in helping us secure the permits. One of the other charities, a new charity this year is American Warrior Initiative. That's Sean Parnell's charity. He's been...
Oh, cool.
Yeah. They are a job placement advocacy group that gets veterans good jobs. We have Wishes for Warriors, which is an organization out of Idaho that takes physically disabled veterans back into the field to go hunting. Horses for Heroes needs no introduction on this program.
Rick Iannucci.
We've been over that one a million times. And then, of course, there's Stop Soldier Suicide. And that is, I mean, it actually started with Stop Soldier Suicide and Horses for Heroes and morphed into a five charity thing. But each one of the charities is a grassroots charity that does something different. And we're really hoping to raise the money for them this year by doing this. This is what we've done. We don't ask people to give us the money to give it to them. There's no 501c3.
Yeah, C4, and it goes right to
no
them.
Accountants, no fancy website. You buy a t-shirt. This year it's a long sleeve shirt for $25.
Which looks awesome.
Yeah, they look pretty cool. Minimum donation, $25. We give you the shirt, but you write the check to the charity or do the PayPal to the charity, and then we just get the info and send you the shirt. So at no point are we paying for lawyers and accountants and compliance people. 100% goes to these grassroots charities. And I think that's why we've been able to build such confidence in this, because you're not trusting me with your money. You're not trusting any of us with your money.
It sounds like very, NPR tote bag kind of guy to me, but there is something to be said for like going towards these smaller organizations and keeping it more like local grassroots. As the years have gone on, I'm like more inclined to give money through like a family or a soldier that's running like a GoFundMe campaign, where like I know the money is going right to this guy's family to pay for this soldier's medical bills, whatever crisis it is he's going through. I'm much more inclined to give money to the Rick Iannucci's of the world and other guys who are running these smaller charities, as opposed to some of the big ones. And I know we all know a few of them.
Yeah, with their overhead and their corporate structure.
Where the CEO and the executive board are pulling down almost $1 million a year in their take-home pay. Like, I'm not interested in donating money for that.
Well, I have spent my time in music radio. I've watched how a charity concert goes off, and you hear the phrase partial proceeds. And yeah, wouldn't it be great if 100% could go to the charity in question? But, you know, stage crews don't work for free.
Right,
security
right.
guards don't work. You know, that it takes a lot. It takes money to make money, whether in business or in charity. It is nice to be able to do this with these charities we've vetted, and almost all of them are volunteer, right? Like Brian Kinsella and his group, they're all Wall Street guys. They're guys that, you know, were officers in the military. They don't need to be doing this stuff. They could be focusing it on, you know, the stock price of whatever stock price they're focusing on. They've chosen to do this with a network of volunteers. We're just getting some more money to them to do what they do with Stop Soldier Suicide. And for Rick started Horses for Heroes in his spare bedroom. Now they have a 16-man bunkhouse. We've watched them grow with so much of the money that we've given them. That's why we continue to do this. And this year, I think, last year, God bless the guys that rode, it was about 20 degrees in Hope, New Jersey at the rallying point at a Tremont and Harley-Davidson, and they had about an hour and a half ride in that cold, and they all did it, you know, and I think maybe 10 or 12 bikes dropped out, and I think we ended up with like 88 or 89 bikes. This year, the NYPD gave us the permit for 200 bikes, so that's two city blocks. We figured out, I was out there literally with a tape measure, and we were walking the street figuring out the width So we came out with one city block equal to 100 bikes. And when we had the logistics meeting, our representative with the NYPD said, I think we can get you two blocks if you want to do 200 bikes. And I'm like, ooh, well, the weather better hold up. We're going to have to check with our guys at the New Jersey State Troopers.
This is two blocks where the boys can pull up, park their bikes, and then like come in and have a beer.
Last year what they did was they parked. They had the entire street, 50th between Broadway and 8th Ave, in front of M&O Looney's. And we parked the bikes, and pretty much NYPD gave us a parade permit. And they actually stationed an officer out there. I felt bad, like, is he a rookie guarding the bikes? But like, there was an officer who was just walking the line, you know, making sure the bikes were all right. And most of the guys that came, that ate, that drank, that got their shirt, they stayed for the entire 3-hour broadcast. And even after paying their fee and even after getting their shirts, a lot of these guys were police officers and firefighters and veterans themselves that had bundled checks from other groups of people.
Oh, really?
So it wasn't just their $30 to ride last year. It was their $30 plus, you know, here's from our department, here's from our, you know, our group. That's when we had the person from the Harley-Davidson dealership volunteer, the manager, sit there and account. It was like the money was just coming in, and we handed each organization their big envelope. It was, you know, here's your checks, here's your money.
Can you say about how much money you guys raised last year?
I think it was $36,000 in the 2 weeks leading up and then culminating in the event. But then people, this is where my structuring of the charity got a little costly, and I don't mind donating more. The way we set it up was we split the cost of making 450 shirts between myself, M&O Loonies, and Tremont and Harley. And then at the end of it, we're like, there's no more shirts left. But then I get a call from John Alves at Dirtbag, and you guys know him. He's like, we got more orders coming in. He's like, we got like another 150 orders.
Oh, shit.
So I had to fulfill those orders to get those shirts sent out. And this is what we figured out last year looking at it. We put up about $3,600 to make the shirts, maybe a little, maybe about $3,800 when it was all said and done. And we raised about $38,000. So for every dollar we put up to get the shirts, $10 came back in return. And one guy sent $5,000.
Wow.
One guy, one shirt, $5,000.
That's awesome.
We have another guy who already put up $5,000 for one shirt before we even opened up the link to donate. But if you can do $1 in upfront costs to get $10 in return and 100% goes to the charities, even if it doesn't sound as impressive as a massive concert, still, when you look at their overhead and what actually makes it to the actual veterans, it's pennies on the dollar by the time it actually gets in the hands of somebody missing a leg or contemplating suicide.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like really what you do is you're opening up this platform that you've built, you know, your day-to-day radio show on SiriusXM and providing that platform for all of these charities.
Well, you know what I hope happens, you know, and this is our second year with the motorcycles. This is our sixth year, I believe, with the broadcast. My hope is by next year that if we don't run into any snags with the financing, with the permit getting, I could say this, that we didn't pay for the permits. NYPD took care of us.
That's
on the
great.
Permits. I don't know what the permits actually cost. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but they were very adamant to like, hey, we want to be a part of this. They're actually, what we said to them was, if you can hook us up, we'll make you a sponsor. So of the five charities and the logos of mine, the dealership, and Emmett, we added NYPD.
Oh, cool.
They officially put themselves on this. I'm hoping that this could become a model for other people who want to do fundraising for grassroots charities, because, you know, to snag a corporate sponsor is tough, right? I mean, you've got PR people and lawyers and accountants, and, you know, you don't just go walking into the ivory tower of a major corporation and say, I'd like you to sponsor our charity.
And I think people need to understand that, too, is like these big charities, it's not when the money is not getting directly to the veterans, or it's quote unquote wasted. It's not corruption necessarily. It's, as you said, there is like legitimate overhead that you have to deal with when you're with these really big organizations.
Do you remember, by the way, I was the only person there who knew, you know, the people from Red Circle Foundation. So I'm taking the train back with this envelope full of money. And I think it was Joan Chen from SiriusXM was like, yeah, you better not lose that or anything. Obviously, it got in the right hands. But it was like just this giant wad of cash and checks.
Well, that's what that was the other side.
You thought Brandon would be there or something.
People were walking up and just handing us wads of cash. And
a brown paper bag.
Smartly, the manager of the dealership had brought a receipt book because she was on it. So anyone that handed cash off, she wrote what charity you wanted to go to. Oh, you wanted to go to Horses for Heroes? Okay, $50. You know, here's your receipt. And she put it in a manila envelope marked Horses for Heroes. And at the end of the event, we said, here you go, Horses for Heroes. So everybody, I witnessed us handing off the money to, you know, Ian was representing Red Circle last year. This year, though, the charities are all going to be represented in-house. So this is going to be the first time that all five charities are going to be represented in-house with their guests on the air. And it's going to be really cool. And the one thing I do love about this, I've never served, you know that, is it's very tribal in the beginning. Like the Army guys are over here, the Marine guys are over here, the Airmen are over here, the Navy guys are over here. And then by like an hour in, somebody's like, buy those sailors a drink, and I love you guys. And, you know, we have all kinds of, there's all kinds of camaraderie. And one of my favorite moments from, I think it was 3 years ago, was Brandon Buescher, who was then the executive director of Stop Soldier Suicide. He's talking to a guy in the Air Force, and he goes, or the Navy, and he says, I think I called an airstrike in with you in Iraq. And they start talking, And you know, that's the amazing thing about the military. Everybody knows by unit, by squadron, whatever it is, where they were. And they were pretty convinced that he had called in an airstrike with him as a fast company Marine. I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah. Every year it just seems to get bigger. I mean, yeah. I was working for you the first year that you did this, and you know, there wasn't like this huge audience
because it was people coming into a bar and, oh, there's a broadcast. That's great.
And it's also, you know, noon to three. It's not, you know, I know it's Veterans Day, but it's not a day people might typically be there. And now I've seen this thing just grow year from year.
It also depends on what day of the week. You're right about that. I mean, last year we got lucky with the calendar year. Yeah. It was a Saturday. This is a Sunday. We got to think next year, like, oh, it's going to be a couple of years before it's a weekend. Are we going to be able to get the riders? You know, the first, you're right. The first couple of years, it was whoever was in Times Square. Yes, there were people that knew the radio program. A lot of people were just there because it was a bar that was open on Veterans Day. And, you know, it looked like something was going on. But, yeah, it has grown. And the donations now, we get a lot of emails. I wish I could be there, but here's some money. You know, the people buy the Vet Ride shirt, they're not coming.
That's cool.
And for people who are in the area, of course, I should give the information. So this is the Vet Ride 2018, Sunday, November 11th. So this coming Sunday, if you're listening to it now. 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. is the actual ride from Harley-Davidson in Hope, New Jersey. And you could still sign up.
Well, that's the rallying time. They're going to be a kickstand. They call it kickstands up at 11. So they want the riders there at 9, sign them in. They got to sign their waivers. There's all kinds of insurance with that part of it. They get their shirt. There's going to be coffee and donuts. And then they're going to be wheels up or kickstands up at 11. And they should arrive at the venue at Ebbin O'Looney's around 12:30, quarter to 1.
And you're live 12 to 3.
We're live 1 to 4.
1 to 4, okay. And from what I saw, you could still, if you are a rider, you could still get tickets right on Eventbrite.
Yeah, vetride2018@gmail.com.
I saw on eventbrite.com.
Yeah, there's an Eventbrite too also, yeah.
Yeah, if you find vetride2018, and that's eventbrite.com, I see it on there. But then if you just want to come for the broadcast, which I'm doing, of course, and I think you're doing. It's
really, the hardest thing to organize is the riders. That's what I do and what Emmett does. Organizing the shirts, it's a pain in the butt, answering emails and dealing with people's checks. And I thought I ordered a medium. I need a large. but it's getting all the bikes. I mean, a column of 100 bikes is longer than a mile, I believe, when they're riding wheel to wheel. And they only get one lane on I-80 eastbound. Then you have, and it gets complicated, you have the Blue Knights and the New Jersey State Troopers. Then they've got to hand them off to Port Authority police, who then run the toll plaza.
Through the tunnel?
Through the tunnel. Then NYPD. So you've got this column that stretches about a mile. And I don't know what 200 bikes looks like. I don't know if they're going to go side by side on this. Just the column coming down 50th and then backing those bikes in one by one it was so loud. I mean, it was like rock concert loud.
Sure.
You know, those narrow streets with all of those Harley Davidsons. It was amazing.
On a quiet Sunday.
Yeah, on a quiet Sunday.
So it's Emmett O'Looney's 210 West 50th, as we always say, not to be confused with his father's bar, O'Looney's.
Corner of 50th and Broadway is just easier. Yeah.
Emmett O'Looney's. And then the charities it's benefiting, Operation Chill Out, Wishes for Warriors, Stop Soldier Suicide, Horses for Heroes, and American Warrior Initiative. I'm excited for it, man, just because every year this thing grows. And I think even though it's on a Sunday as opposed to a Saturday last year, I think we're going to see
close
a huge
weekend.
Crowd. So.
We had guys, you know, the Steve D, who's running all the – he's the guy that actually answers the Vet Ride email, Stephen DeSalvo. He is getting interest from Maine, Illinois, and last year – and we think the guys are coming back – two guys from South Carolina trucked their bikes up, and then it turned out it was going to be about 20 degrees when they were starting to ride. Like, we're from South Carolina. We don't have – so the dealership had to, like, give them, like, rock-bottom prices on cold weather riding gear. But so far, checking the weather, if it holds up this year, I think we're going to have all 200 bikes. And, you know, last year we saw the registration came in, and then about 3 days out, it just spiked. So we've been seeing the spike already, and we pre-sold 300 shirts before the riders have even – gotten their own. So 300 shirts are already out the door and are going to be shipped soon. So we're kind of starting at 500 shirts. And I'm like,
that's awesome.
I do pretty well to put up money up front. But if we start getting into like 600, 700, 800 shirts, I mean, I'm going to have to like, you know, say, all right, you know, maybe we cut that off or look for another, look for someone who wants to throw some money our way to make more shirts.
It's a good problem to have, though.
Yeah. Well, it's a good problem for the charities.
Yeah.
And I know that you need an easy pass if you're going to ride.
Yes,
that,
you need
that's
an
like
easy
the
pass.
One stipulation. You know what I was wondering is your producer, who we all know, Mike Binns, is his dad going to be riding? He's a big biker.
Yeah, you know, I haven't spoken to we haven't really talked about it. He might be. I remember he was a little annoyed last year that Mike didn't tell him, and Mike's like, I didn't think you'd actually come all the way from PA just to ride
from
this.
What I know about Mike's dad, he's like a
Navy
Trump,
vet, Navy vet.
And a Trump supporting like biker with neck tattoos.
Fits
in.
We're a stereotypical conservative radio show. You know? I'm sitting here in my misfit shirt, and yes, my producer's father is a tatted up biker, and you know, we're watching the Kiss. You know, concert ticket prices, typical conservative radio show.
Yeah, we were talking about that before, which that's so cool. I think that Gene Simmons was on the show. And
he's a big military supporter.
Yeah.
You know, he's one of the band. A lot of bands are afraid to come out and say it. Like, they'll say those superficial things like, I appreciate your service and thank you for your service. But I mean, like, Kiss will stop a show to do like an entire tribute to, and so will Avenged Sevenfold, by the way, stop the show to do an entire tribute to the military.
Yeah, there's been a few. You know, it's funny. I actually
Don't forget CJ Ramone, obviously.
CJ Ramone. I got comp tickets to Poison over the summer. They do the same thing and bring vets out on stage. So it's a lot of 80s bands, I guess.
Can I be a little self-indulgent with the CJ Ramone? You got to hear this story. This is funny for your audience.
Oh, I love
All
this
right,
stuff.
So CJ Ramone is a former Marine, and he's a Marine's Marine. He loves loves the Marine Corps. He's, you know, like most Marines. We were at Chiller Theater, and if anyone doesn't know what that is, it's a comic book horror movie autograph seeking geek fest leading up to Halloween. So he was going to be signing in the room. Vinnie Vincent was like there. And you had a bunch of old wrestlers and 70s TV stars. Loretta Swit from MASH was there. Major Houlihan. So they had a bomb scare at the Parsippany Hilton. And he calls me up. He's like, don't bother coming. There's a bomb scare. So after about 4 hours, they opened the thing back up. And it was kind of past the time when most people are seeking autographs. So all the celebrities, if you could call them that for most of them, start coming out. And we're sitting at the bar. And I'm sitting there. You know, none of us drove. It was fine. My wife was drinking. I was drinking. My friends were drinking. CJ's drinking. Everyone's drinking. Brian Knobbs. From the Nasty Boys from the 80s,
that's
right?
I knew I recognized the
comes
name.
Comes walking out. He's got to be in his like mid to late 60s. You know, he's just, you know, past his prime wrestler, very fat. And some drunk guy takes a swing at him.
Really?
Like some,
holy shit.
You know what talking was going on about wrestling, and he takes a swing at him. And you hear this loud thud, and it's Brian Knobbs on his back, and he's screaming, my shoulder's dislocated. The first person off the bench into the fight with this guy was CJ Ramone. But CJ Ramone, beer down, off the thing, he's off this table before I can even react. And then I see Chuck Zito come running out of the crowd.
No,
so Chuck Zito, I'm like, if this guy knew that the two guys about to grab him or CJ Ramone and Chuck Zito, he probably wouldn't knock down one of the Nasty Boys. But it was just when CJ sat back down, it was just like, that's a Marine, right? He heard the thing. It was so cartoonish and comical, but he's such a Marine that way. He was off his bar stool and into the fight with this guy before any of us. My wife and I were like, what's happening? What's happening?
You know? That's more eventful than anything else you would have seen there, because it's really just guys sitting down signing autographs. I mean, that's the story right there.
But it was just so funny. Like, it's the geekiest. It's such a geek fest, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the longest line that I saw where people were, I forgot the guy's name that played Captain Steubing on the Love Boat, but he had like an hour-long wait to sign up for that guy. You know, there was Biling was there. There was like all these, like, Carmen Electra was there. But
Carmen Electra got a picture with CJ.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was a literal rock star. But it was just so funny how he was not CJ Ramone bass player guy. He was CJ Ramone Marine guy.
Yeah.
When this old wrestler got knocked down and was like rolling around on the floor yelling. Just a funny
He's
story.
A really That's nice a guy. Story. You know, every time I met him, you know, we have really good conversation.
Well, you know, again, just a former Marine.
What wasn't one of the other Ramones there too?
Richie Ramone, yeah. He was in the band for a very short period of time and didn't seem very happy about being there. I don't know, just didn't seem like a very happy guy.
Richie didn't, but
Richie.
But yeah, but CJ did.
So CJ was awesome. That's cool. We I think we left the bar a little after 1 a.m. and he was texting. He texted me at 2:30 a.m. And I woke up the next morning, I texted him back 2:30? And he's like, are you coming back? So I went back to see him. And he's like, yeah, I went back to my room with some of the other people. We went through a bottle of scotch. I'm like, that's hardcore. He goes, you want to get me a beer? So like, I walked into the hospitality cart. I came back to his table, and we were sitting there drinking beers on a Sunday morning after, yeah.
At the Chiller last year, Mike Binns waited in line, I think, like 2 hours to get me a signed
picture. Yes, Vinny Vincent looks like a woman. If you're going to ask me, does it look like Vinny Vincent is transitioning to a woman? Yes.
No, I definitely believe really ugly one. He is. Anyway, back onto like your real stuff. Yes. Well, no, I think we covered a lot of that. I was actually going to ask you about today's election. I mean, it's funny because I know Jack
because you haven't had enough of that yet.
No, well, you know, I am optimistic. I think that... I accept that people do not like Donald Trump's personality, his persona, the tweeting. I think some people think the rallies are a little over the top, but you can't, whether or not you like his personality, it's kind of hard to argue with 3.7% unemployment and 7.14 million unfilled jobs. I don't mean to snap back into my role as the guy on the Patriot channel.
The economy is strong right now.
Right. And I think this was the fate of Bob Dole, was that, you know, you had a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Democrat president who at the time was a pretty moderate to even conservative Democrat president, Bill Clinton, on a lot of fiscal issues. But there was no what was the argument to change the way things were going back in 1996? Is Bill Clinton different than Donald Trump? Absolutely. But I think the Democrats are going to flip a bunch of seats. I think the Republicans hold it by one. That's just my prediction. I am not one of these people that sits around, we are sitting around a glass table, but sits around a glass table pretending that I can see the future. I could be totally naive thinking that everybody's voting on the economy like I think they should, or I know I did.
I mean, you were one of the people who had it right on Donald Trump, so, you know.
But anything can happen.
Behind all the hemming and hawing, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if the Republicans hang on to both Senate and Congress.
Yeah, I think that there will be a pretty hysterical mental breakdown. That, like we saw in 2016, because it's kind of like, oh no, not again. You know, too many of these people put their faith in these pollsters who I think their models are really outdated. And I think for the media, what keeps them up at night does not keep the rest of the country up at night.
Yeah. So, you know what I was going to say though is, Jack, you've said this often on the podcast that you're like, you even remember back when you were a kid, I think you said it was the Clinton Bush senior election. People were saying, this is the last election of our lifetime, folks. You better get up and vote.
Better vote now.
Is there any election where it's not like that? I say this. I don't like when people say this is a historic election. Every election is. Is there a president who is not historic?
One of my conservative friends posting on Facebook yesterday is like, pray for America for the next 48 hours because we might not have our freedom anymore. It's like, man, calm down.
The point I wanted to make, though, is like I don't like to go into the hyperbole of that. However, I mean, for here in New York, I don't know if you disagree. I mean, I think Cuomo is going to stay the governor. Yeah, unfortunately, I voted against him, but it is what it is. But if you live in Texas or Florida, personally, I never thought that you would come this close to possibly seeing a senator from Texas or Florida who's anti-gun. And I mean, those are the...
Beto O'Rourke is down 13 points. I'm not on the Beto mania.
What about, I mean, you're a guy who lived in Florida. Florida is one of the most pro-gun states, and you know, they're possibly going to elect a guy, Gillum, who's strongly anti-gun.
Here's the weird thing about that. He is promoting this real socialist agenda, and he's trying to assure everyone he's going to pay for it by just raising the corporate tax. Well, whether it's the income tax or the corporate tax, or he's going to find out very quickly, like they did in Vermont, that you can't just offer single payer without doubling your state budget. The money is going to have to come from somewhere. And there's a reason why people move their homes and their businesses to Florida. It's not because they want it to be more like New Jersey. It's the same thing. There's always the constant fights over the wages paid at Disney. And in the end, the state says, you know what? There's only so far we're going to push Disney. Now, are they like Amazon, likely to pick up a warehouse and move out? No. But when you look at the engine of the economy there, tourism, agriculture, and you're saying you're going to raise the corporate tax. Well, that's going to be paid somehow. That has to be paid for somehow.
It's just going to get passed on to the consumer anyway.
Right. It's this fantasy that the Democrats throw out there. Well, we're going to have to raise taxes on those oil companies. Well, you're not raising taxes on the oil companies. When we go to the pump, we're going to pay for that. That's not me saying that as a conservative voter. That's me saying that as a basic understanding of basic economics.
The people who believe that stuff are the people who have never had to like run a business before. They don't understand like tax is just something you factor into your cost of doing business, and then
whatever
that,
it is
that goes into the retail price of your product.
You know what I find also funny is that in John James, who I think is a rock star, guy, is that the media is kind of throwing down the gauntlet that if you're not for Stacey Abrams, you're not for Andrew Gillum, you're obviously some kind of a bigot, right? They'll let Beto, Robert O'Rourke, run around kind of trying, speaking Spanish, ignoring the fact that Ted Cruz is actually Hispanic. That it's kind of funny that the worst thing you could be accused of is being a racist. So instead of saying, I disagree with you, or let's debate these economic issues, or let me explain why I think this works or it doesn't work, the media and the Democrats have kind of thrown down the gauntlet. If you're not with us, you're this terrible person. And they didn't learn that lesson from the deplorable comment. I think when the books are written on this decade, political historians are going to go, the going all in that everyone I don't like is Hitler was a bad idea.
That's a huge mistake. And I think it's going to cost them in midterms. It obviously cost them in 2016. We know that with hindsight.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to cost them in 2020 because they're not changing their ways. They're just doubling down on the identity politics. And
it's not even identity politics. It's not. If you said we need to have a more diverse government, we need to encourage more people to run for office. Okay.
That's a more positive message.
That's different than saying everyone I don't like is a Nazi. And even more bizarre when you say, well, I don't believe in socialism. You're a Nazi. Do you know the second word in National Socialist German Workers' Party is socialist? It's almost like you're being called pejoratives by people who don't even know the pejorative meaning.
It's just reflexive. It's like they feel like they have to do that. And I think especially, not with mainstream Democrats, but especially people who are on the far left, the democratic socialists and things like that, those ideas don't have any real mainstream appeal. So I think they really feel like they have to call you that. That's like kind of the law of last resort for them, is they have to demonize everyone who doesn't feel the same way they do as being some sort of fascist.
You know, what's funny is that the people who will call my program or send me nasty emails or tweets, you get fascist, racist, you get all these things. And I'm pretty sure within two lines of reading the email or 30 seconds of the call that you don't really understand what a fascist is. These are just pejoratives you assign to people that you don't like. That if you really understood how a fascist or national socialist or communist economy worked, you wouldn't be saying to people who lean libertarian that you're a fascist. I don't think the government should be running healthcare. You're a Nazi. Wait a second. It doesn't work that way.
Well, even in a more pragmatic sense, I mean, if you are on the far left, you're not going to win votes. You're not going to convince people to come over to your side by constantly calling them fucking Nazis all the time. Like, that's not an effective strategy.
You also don't see, and I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you covered this thing with Dan Crenshaw.
This is the first show since then. We'll cover it right now.
You know what I find fascinating is I don't agree with Tammy Duckworth. I would never, ever,
say that about
even
her.
Just to set it up, would I mock her missing limbs? Whether I agree with her politically or not, that woman gave half of her body left half of her body on the battlefield. With that said, my arguments with her would be on economics or the Constitution or the 10th Amendment. And the idea that when you're dealing, and I thought it was hysterical with John McCain, that when John McCain was running against Barack Obama, he was this god awful person. But when, he came into conflict with Trump, it's like he's a veteran. He was a POW. That's not what you said before.
But to be fair, it's also because Trump's comments about McCain they were outrageous. I think they were worse than Pete Davidson's comments.
It was funny listening to the people who were defending McCain, who accused him of being a racist and a bigot and all years earlier, that when you talk, it's the same thing, though. I'm trying to bring it into the military, that you look at what was said about Dan Crenshaw and what has been said about conservative veterans. conservatives would never tolerate fellow conservatives using those kind of remarks against progressive veterans.
Yeah.
John Kerry,
no, you're right.
You know, the anger at John Kerry came from other veterans. It wasn't, you know, when you look at disagreeing with a veteran, I would never mock a veteran service, especially an injured one.
Well, do you want me to play? Let me play the clip since we're talking about it. I didn't know we were getting to it right now, but we might as well.
This guy's kind of cool.
There we go.
Dan Crenshaw.
Oh, come on, man.
Yo, hold on. You may be surprised to hear he's a congressional candidate from Texas and not a hitman in a porno movie.
I don't think that's the problem right there.
That's exactly what I said to Jack.
In war or whatever.
Yeah, let me go back to that. This was the part.
I'm sorry. I know he lost his eye in war or whatever.
That was really, I agree entirely. When he said lost his eye in war or whatever, that was really difficult. Because the first joke would have been a joke.
That would have been a joke.
Yeah, I agree entirely with what you just said. And you know what? I want to play Dan Crenshaw's response. Because I actually appreciated the fact that Dan Crenshaw didn't say, like, I'm outraged, we need to boycott NBC. And I think it actually shows that, I mean, I don't personally, as someone who is more right-leaning and does vote for more Republicans, I don't want us to be the language police and the PC police, the way that the Democrats have said we can't have a poo on the Simpsons anymore. You know what I mean?
No,
I do think you have to be consistent in that. And I like the fact that Dan Crenshaw's response was really classy. So this is what he said to TMZ.
I want us to get away from this culture where we demand apologies every time someone misspeaks. I think that would be very healthy for our nation to go in that direction. We don't need to be outwardly outraged. I don't need to demand apologies from them. They can do whatever they want. They're feeling the heat from around the country right now, and that's fine. But
you know,
I would like him and Saturday Night Live to recognize something, which is that veterans across the country probably don't feel as though their wounds they received in battle should be the subject of a bad punchline for a bad joke. And here's the real atrocity of all this. It wasn't even funny, right? It was not original. It was not funny. It was just mean-spirited. And that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I laughed at that because that's Crenshaw just being like, bro,
fuck off.
It wasn't even funny. You know what? And I'm sure you've seen this when you watch movies, that it was Hollywood. And Pete Davidson's not responsible for this. But Hollywood created the burned-out Vietnam veteran. You know, Hollywood has had an odd relationship with the veteran community. On one side, actors so desperately want to play Green Berets and Navy SEALs and pilots. You know, they want to be in epic films like Saving Private Ryan and what have you. And then, you know, when it turns on, you know, you look at the comedy side. I mean, Cousin Eddie from the Vacation movies. You know, you have these constant movies that have the burned out, dangerous, you know, Travis Bickle veteran, you know, that leaves people really believing that veterans really are dangerous and shouldn't be around your children or your place of business.
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird how, like, being a Vietnam veteran was a kind of a taboo thing socially. And I think it kind of, the first thing I think of actually...
Can you think of one movie, except the Green Berets maybe, one movie that focused on the heroism of men who went into the Vietnam
Not
War.
Many.
Yeah, right.
Not many.
I'm so out of this because I don't know movies.
Well, I think the one that really like popularized or commercialized the notion of it is the Lethal Weapon movies. When Mel Gibson played, like that movie tried
That's
to make
a special
it
special forces tattoo.
Yeah, they like romanticized it, you know, being like the burned out crazy Vietnam veteran. And I think that kind of started a trope, you know, in Hollywood.
Do you have that special forces tattoo? You know the scene I'm talking about.
With the skull.
You're here to arrest Trixie.
So I don't know. Should that be throat punch of the week? I'll be honest. I wasn't. Well, I'm not a veteran, but at the same time, I wasn't really outraged. I know Pete Dominic kind of. Pete Davidson. You know what it is? Because I've worked with you so long that he was always in our office and everything. Pete Davidson. I know is very much like a kind of over the top comic. I remember when he would go on Opie and Anthony, he was very like brutal. That's the type of comedy he does.
He jokes about his own father dying in 9/11. I you know, a lot of comedians.
He was a police officer, right?
Or there's a firefighter.
Okay.
I feel like for some of these guys, if you can't afford therapy, you go to open mic night.
Yeah.
Like there is some of these guys say things that you wouldn't say even kiddingly to someone who, you know, you might be paying by the hour. It's like, there's some weird self-loathing thing about many comedians. And I'm not saying it's all of them, because there's some very funny people out there, but some of them seem to be very tortured people.
Yeah,
and like, we're kind of laughing at their pain, and like, you're not sure that they're kidding sometimes.
Well, it's like, I think Ice Cube said about the barbershop movies, you know, he made it because like in a barbershop, there's things you can say there that you wouldn't say anywhere else ever. And comedy is kind of the same way, you know, comedy clubs and that culture.
But there's, you know, where's the funny?
Right, right.
Where's the funny here? Like Crenshaw said, the joke wasn't funny. People laughed uncomfortably at that, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He didn't need to. I think if he just left it at that first part of it would have been like, all right, and moved on to some other graphic.
Yeah.
But there was that discomfort, that unnecessary and discomforting follow-up that, I don't know. I felt the same way. I'm not worried about it. By the way, in the end, I think we're only going to remember this as Ariana Grande's ex-boyfriend.
I mean, personally, I don't give a shit. And I think, you know, Dan Crenshaw, we've had him on the show before. And I mean, he's a down-to-earth guy.
I bet you it helps him in the end. I bet you there's probably people who don't follow
Was he a medic? Because next time Pete Davidson overdoses on some junk, he might need Terry Shepard to come rescue him.
I think you're absolutely right, though, Andrew. Like, if they were cracking jokes on Tammy Duckworth, that would not have been okay with the, like, liberals would have gone apeshit over
and
that.
It wouldn't have been okay with anyone in the community either, right? I think that people can disagree, but I think if somebody went out there and made some sick joke about Tammy Duckworth, I think veterans would be like, whoa.
Yeah, it's not cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're correct. But yeah, well, I do think this will be forgotten at some point. But as I said, I bet you there's people who don't follow their local congressional race, and they're like, oh, this guy's a Navy SEAL, you know, risked his life in combat. I'm going to vote for him. I bet you it'll get him some votes.
Yeah. And Texas,
Why not?
Chris Kyle and Marcus Luttrell, and
Is he doing well, by the way? Because we had him.
You know what? I have not been tracking a lot of these House polls because, again, it's so boring to sit there for 3 hours and talk about literally 435 races. I realize not all of them are toss-ups. I realize that some of them are, you know, for Republican or Democrat, are really secure, but the polling data. You're talking about a system whereby which, first of all, it's predicated on people picking up the phone.
Yeah.
And then sitting there and answering a series of questions where you don't even know the nature of the question. I've answered some of these things, and you know they'll ask you questions. You don't even know why they're asking you. They don't ask you straight up questions. You consider yourself a liberal or a conservative. Do you normally? They'll ask you things like, do you think healthcare should be restricted? No, you know,
I know what you mean, because I've answered those political polls at times where they call your cell phone just for the hell of it. And yeah, it's a lot of like from 1 to 10. Where is this issue and stuff like that?
The worst is the robo polls, because who the hell is sitting through? I wouldn't care if I got a robo call that said, "Hi, I think Andrew Wilkow is the greatest radio show on earth. Press 1 if you agree." I'd be like, off. You know, a lot of these are the robo polls where you're supposed to say, like you said, they ask you a series of questions from 1 to 10. Who is answering those?
Yeah.
You can't, like little old ladies, you know, down.
How many of them? Okay, I guess by now they have cell phones, but for the longest time they were still relying on landlines. So I think the polling has been so bad lately, and this belief that some of these prognosticators like Nate Silver can't be wrong. That guy was dead wrong in 2016. Like what was really fascinating, and I was doing my own live coverage, was the media had gone all in. That this Trump thing was just a show, it was a joke, his idiot voters were eventually going to learn their lesson, and we were going to move into the Clinton presidency. And it almost became like this question of mental health and well-being for the I'm with her crowd. Not just moderate Democrats, I'm talking about the bumper sticker crowd. And I feel like they did it again with this election. They were July, they were sure. Blue wave, blue wave, blue wave. And even this morning, I flipped to, I was flipping the channels, and I caught Morning Joe, and there's Joe Scarborough saying, I don't know. like they're all sitting there with these like deadpan faces, and Mika's you shouldn't go all in on these things when you don't really know. That's why I don't.
Well, it's like they're trying to build the enthusiasm, build the consensus. Like, this is the right side of history. You need to be with us. And I know we've both talked about this before, Andrew, but I don't know if you have any additional thoughts on this, that I feel like since the Trump election, we've seen even the facade of objectivity drop. Like, the cards seem like they're really on the table with the media. In a way that they haven't been in the past. Like, this is it. They are all in full tilt. This is the agenda. Like, you better get on board.
I think last time I was on with you guys, we talked about new media a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think what separates new media from traditional media is we don't take the audience's intelligence for granted. I think some of these people still think that this is Walter Cronkite.
Yeah.
It's
the voice from God.
It's 1968, and whatever they put on television is what it is. You know, starting with the Dan Rather Texas Air National Guard document scandal, that's not the first time it happened. It was the first time someone major got caught. And I think the media did not say to itself, you know, we're in a new era.
Yeah.
We're in an era of internet, sleuths and new media. And if we lie again, we're going to get caught again.
A lot more data transparency.
Yeah, a lot. I think the media consumer is way more savvy today than they were 50 years ago. And if you're going to be an opinion journalist, just say it.
Yeah.
You know, when people say, well, Hannity, Ingram, and Tucker aren't pretending they're doing the news. They're pretty clear that what you're watching is an opinion news talk show. Some of these programs on CNN and MSNBC where they're trying to pretend they're just doing the news and here's what's happening.
Right.
You can't watch that for a second. I don't even think their audience believes it. I think their audience is rooting it on, like, give us your opinion. You know, come on, Rachel Maddow, tell us how much you hate Donald Trump. The phony objectivity is almost insulting at this point.
Yeah.
How about the lack of fact-checking? I couldn't believe with the Gillum race, they interviewed his mom on TV as a random voter.
Did you see the graphic they put up the other night? They put up a victory graphic. They had the graphic where they had already had Gillum. It had the check, and it had his percentage, and they had to take it down.
What do you think's the reasoning behind that?
I don't know. I don't.
Yeah.
It's like they've already decided who's going to win, and now they have to manufacture the reality. And it's just kind of spooky to see all of that there's not even a, like I said, the facade of objectivity. It isn't even there.
Some of these.
And it discredits journalism.
It does. And look, you're a journalism school grad. I'm a journalism school grad.
I didn't go to journalism school.
I thought you went to Columbia School of Journalism.
No, my wife did. I was a political science major.
Okay, political science. Sorry.
Were you a journalism minor or?
No.
Okay, I was radio and poli sci minor.
No, I was
political
science.
Well, then ask your wife this. Some of these people, you know, reading teleprompter is it's its own skill. It's not a tough thing to develop, but some people are better at it than others. You notice when some of these anchors, especially in the daytime programs, veer off the script and start, you know, asking their own questions. You get some real dumb moments.
Yeah.
You know, on the news, if you could call it the news. And look, I get it. It's television. You have to have pretty people doing these things, but somebody should be telling them things like this, like Katie Turr. Like, there's like the Free Beacon has a whole montage of like facts she's gotten wrong, screwing up districts, screwing up races, screwing up amendments to the Constitution. It's kind of the audience should not inherently know more than you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it was on his teleprompter when Don Lemon said that white males are the biggest terrorist threat.
That's a perfect example of the doubling down on the stupidity. Like, that is a failed strategy right there. It doesn't work.
But the truth is, he'll always get behind you.
It's crazy. Like, how can
I'm not going to go there.
I said that in passing in my radio show. I go, hey, when it comes to white men, always know this. Don Lemon is right behind you.
Jesus Christ.
You know what? You can call that a homophobic remark. He could just condemn an entire group of people for nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And I
it's interesting how they
And that's not dangerous. You know, that's the funny thing.
Right.
Is that when they talk about dangerous rhetoric and responsibility in media, and then they go out and say things like the most likely terrorists or the most dangerous group of people are white males, it's like, okay, are you not hearing yourself?
Well, it's like they tell us all the time, and I agree, that not all Muslims are terrorists, and we should not demonize all Muslims like that. That the left asks us to see these nuances and things like race, like in gender. But then there are these other subjects, like the white male comment, where all the nuance is stripped right out of it, and it's just black and white, white men are dangerous terrorists.
Well, you know what, I think there's a competition sometimes with progressives and media who can say
most woke thing.
The most woke thing. And, you know, if you're a conservative in media, if you're you're just an out conservative in your life, you know there are some things that if you say it, it's different than when somebody else says it, right? Like, there are people that I, you know, at work, at SiriusXM, I don't breathe. If they, you know, if I'm in the coffee room and I'm waiting for my cup of coffee, I don't breathe. You know, there's no body language. There's just, you know, it's like waiting for the soup.
Good day, sir.
Yes.
I have an idea who they are.
Cafe Verona, you know. And I think the reason why progressives are able to get away with this is that they have been shielded. Now, look, it's changed a little bit in the whole Me Too thing, but they have been shielded largely from the demands of their own rulemaking. And it's kind of the excuse, it's okay when we
do it. The language policing.
It's okay when we do it. It's the same thing you see with Antifa. It's the same thing you see with some of the violence. If you had videos of people kicking over campaign signs or throwing coffee in somebody's face or ripping hats off of somebody's head, and they were conservatives, the media, one of my favorite things is that, look, I think you could be an asshole without being a racist. I think all racists are assholes, but not all assholes are racists. And when you see these videos like white woman berates Asian woman in supermarket, she could be an asshole without being a racist. You know, but we get these, Yahoo is very good at this, and so are some of the other clickbait sites, that this is the social condition of every single
person. That we can derive a social truth.
Right, this is a social truth. You know, this is the list of things black women can't do, unless, of course, you're Candace Owens and somebody throws a drink in your face, and then we don't talk about it. But we've created now this sort of like these unwritten rules where none of us really know what they are until we're prosecuted under them. And this is a social condition that we have created. And, oh, look, here's a YouTube video from some parking lot, you know.
Hey, you know what I was going to ask you about?
Something that we got here from charities, you know.
Well, I mean, I wanted to get into the election.
Oh, I realize that Soft Rap Radio podcast is a well-rounded
podcast.
We're all
over the place.
There's some meandering going on.
I realize that Jack Murphy has much dimension. I'm just saying that we've come far down this road.
We do plenty of gerrymandering of our own. It's normal.
So, no, you know what I wanted to ask you, though, is I feel like just working with you so long, I know almost as much about your career as you do. Like, the majority of your radio career was spent during the Obama administration, because that was 8 years. I know that you were doing rock radio, and part of the Bush administration, but I mean, that was 8 giant years. You didn't know anybody working for the Obama administration. Nope. And then if you look at this administration, we know people personally worked mm-hmm. with us who are there. Guys like Ryan Zinke, you've had on the show plenty of times, are in the administration.
You've had people go from SiriusXM into the administration.
Yep, Steve Bannon. So what's the difference for you in doing media with an administration where you know a lot of the guys there?
Nothing. You know, when Trump, and I don't think he meant it seriously, and I know it wouldn't be possible, when he said, maybe I'll just change the 14th Amendment, I was like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
I've made it very clear that supporting the things that President Trump does that make sense to conservatives does not include a forgiveness for things he may say or do that, you know, if he says I could change the Constitution with an executive order, no, you can't. And the reason why I do that is because I would say the exact same thing if it were Barack Obama, that when we look at things presidents seek the power to do, if you're a true conservative, constitutionalist, or libertarian, you have to be willing to say no president can do this.
Right.
There are crowds on both sides. Republicans do it as well, that I like it when my guy does it. I am not an I like it when my guy does it kind of guy. That if you want to change a piece of legislation, you want an amendment to the Constitution, you want to exercise authority, it has to be within the scope of your enumerated powers. If it's not, you are operating outside the Constitution.
Well, don't you think he says stuff like that just to dominate the media yes. cycle for like however 72 hours so he can keep them on that? He can just own the media cycle doing stuff like that. It amazes me
how the media
is complicit in it.
Yeah, they just, I mean, even Jon Stewart has come out and said, you guys are
falling for your own narcissism. Yeah.
That this president's speaking style is so unique to modern era presidents that, you know, if somebody said, President Trump, would you just eliminate an amendment? Yeah, sure. You know, like, he has a whatever, you know.
We'll put these people in work camps, whatever. Yeah, you know, whatever,
you know,
man.
Yeah, yeah. Putting nuclear weapons on the moon. Yeah, we're going to do that. You know, like he just, I
don't want to excuse any of that reckless kind of speech, but at the same time, we have to, for our own mental health, we have to start to understand, like, that is not a realistic possibility. He's just saying stupid shit, and tomorrow it's going to be something different.
And I think, you know, his counsel, I think even his most ardent supporters in the administration, I think Mike Pence would walk right into the Oval Office and go, Mr. President, you cannot change the Constitution with an executive order. But see, this is also part of the problem, is that in that it's okay when my guy does it kind of things, the media and the Democrats gave Obama really wide latitude to do things. The killing of Anwar al-Awlaki. Look,
and his
this
son.
This is Safrip, right? We know the world is a better place without Anwar al-Awlaki, but you can't drone strike an American citizen's son without
charge.
They killed his kid. And the media did not make that a bone to pick with the administration. When the media was wiretapped by the administration, their response was, I love you. Fast and Furious, DACA was a fundamental change in how we look at immigration with an Article II power. And because the media gave so much, it was almost amazing to watch the media on day one of the Trump administration pretend that Article II powers didn't transfer and that precedent hadn't been set. And this is why, again, it's not okay when my guy does it. They were pretending
like Trump invented the global war on terror.
Trump invented the executive order.
And he invented North Korea. Where the hell have you guys been?
This is why consistency, and Obama mocked consistency. I remember Ted Cruz famously saying, you know, I don't want Obama issuing these executive orders because I don't think any president should be issuing these types of executive orders. And if an executive order is directly related to an Article II power, a piece of legislation, that's a different story. But to whole cloth create policy that circumvents specific enumerated powers of Congress in Article I, that is not what a president's supposed to be doing. And we have tolerated a lot. We have tolerated case law precedent from the Supreme Court. We have tolerated a lot of things big government has done. And then we get mad when the sea changes and the other side is in power and they go, now we can do it too. Instead of saying, you know what? 10th Amendment's a good thing. First Amendment's a good thing.
It's a very cynical approach to politics that, you know, we're just going to use these things as weapons against our political opponents. But then when our personal party of choice is in office, we're going to ignore all of it.
If we try to imagine the cottage industry of activism, both on the legal side and the street organizing side, if we restricted, let's say, the Supreme Court to its Article III powers and said, no federal policy could come out of the Supreme Court. They could turn back laws, they could strike down laws, but they can't replace laws with other laws. So if Jane Roe thinks that a federal ban on abortion or abortion restrictions unfair, we'll settle this back in Congress or back in the state where she resides. Try to imagine if you couldn't get a gay marriage law at the Supreme Court. You had to fight it out at the state level or fight for a piece of legislation where marriage is not even mentioned in the Constitution. So it really would be.
Right.
If the fighting, the constant fighting over things that the Constitution was not designed to resolve at the federal level went away, you have an entire industry of people whose entire career is the grievance industry.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the reason why marriage licenses exist, wasn't it to stop interracial marriage back in the day?
It was to stop the undesirables, which included, yes, interracial marriage. You know, they made that movie Loving, because that's the Loving case. You know, it's funny, and I've debated this many times, sometimes with gay rights activists, and they'll say, well, you conservatives don't, you know, you wouldn't let blacks and whites marry, and you don't want gays to marry. And I'll say things like, but I don't see that in the Constitution. I don't even know why we're talking about a government function here.
Yeah, why does our government even have to be involved in that?
Because here's my simple explanation. I'm a human events kind of person. Okay, you pass a law that says these people can't get married. But how do you stop them from procreating, right? So clearly this piece of paper didn't stop them from doing what you didn't want them to do, and you have no real way to police that. That why don't we look at ways to get the government out of things instead of the government
address the root issue.
And the more things we get the government into, the more things we're going to be fighting over with the government. If we get government out of more things, we will be a happier people. And I know that's hard to believe.
I believe that, too.
I argue this all the time, that the 10th Amendment, if you don't want... You know, you'll hear people say, well, I hate Betsy DeVos. I don't want her running education. Right. So why don't
kick it down to the states?
Why don't we kick it down to the states and you can run education in California and Texas will run education and the laboratory of good ideas will determine which state has made the right choice and we'll go forward from there. But there's this sense that if we aren't doing – if it isn't central planning, it's nihilism. If we haven't – if we aren't doing everything from the hub of Washington,
D.C. Or it's just some sort of like Hobbesian nightmare where, you know, it's brother against brother in the streets, you know, with lawlessness and anarchy.
Right. And I think – you know, I think this is one thing I don't like about the academic progressives, freeing people who just vote Democrat, is the fundamental distrust – that people can't be trusted to run their own lives on any level. We have a school not far from here called the New School of Social Research, and it's literally the Harvard of social justice warriordom, where these people are trying to figure out how to run your life from the moment you are born to the minute you die.
Basically, like, you know, a Soviet state.
Yes,
and I mean that is like a hallmark that I see in the.
When
in
do
the
we far- talk about guns and blowing shit up? I mean, doesn't that? I mean, do you? Does this?
I do want to. I do. I, we will get into this.
Okay.
This is interesting. I mean, when we have you on,
you're an intellectual, Jack Murphy, but tell me something about.
But you're the talk radio political guy.
Oh, well, we can do this any day over beers.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's
drinking, fighting, and fucking. Should we be talking about that? I realize there's sensitive ears in the room, but you've cursed.
It's something with the far left. They don't believe that any of us can be trusted with our own thoughts and ideas and opinions, and we need some ivory tower.
You live in ground zero of it.
To us what we're supposed to believe, what we're allowed to believe.
I remember when Brooklyn was this hodgepodge of places you wouldn't go at 2 o'clock in the morning, and now the hipsters have taken over.
Oh, absolutely. You know, actually, on the topic of national security and all that, something we've talked about a lot on the show, and I'm wondering your take. Do you think that Mattis is being pushed out for John Bolton? Because it's a very different ideology.
I don't know.
Well, on the 60 Minutes interview where he said, I think Mattis is kind of a Democrat. It was a weird statement.
I don't know that Mattis is a political guy.
Exactly. That's why it was a strange statement. The guy's been as apolitical as you can get, I think.
He's tried, for sure.
I think that if you're somebody like Mattis, you think differently about war than somebody like Bolton. That's not to say that Bolton doesn't have good ideas or thoughts or isn't relevant to the subject matter, but I think there is a different view if you've worn the uniform and if you haven't worn the uniform. I think that's natural. But the national security consultant apparatus is filled with people.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you could watch any given, you know, program and, you know, isn't it kind of amazing that you could have never gone to the FBI Academy and be the FBI director? You know, that we have experts in the field who've never actually done the work. And they've just been appointed.
Bolton is one of those guys. He's a draft dodger. He copped out of Vietnam. And now he sees the military as like this plaything that he can just deploy our troops wherever, topple governments, and it's just his little Sirianni idea that we're going to reshape the Middle East.
I don't share the, you know, I don't share the military adventurism thing. It's easy to say, you know, we should just, you know, who's the we?
Yeah. Because you know? John Bolton ain't going nowhere. He ain't going over
there. At the same time, the understanding of foreign policy, dictatorial and or dangerous governments, you know, is something that a civilian can obviously add to the mix. And look, let's be honest. Trump hasn't proposed getting us into crazy wars.
No.
He's actually been pretty restrained, I would say. For somebody with such a hot-headed personality, he's really kind of pulled back. And I know there can be criticisms of putting the military on the border.
Well, but I see what you're saying with that.
Reagan was the most conservative president, and we didn't have any big conflicts during his administration.
Trump has made those comments about like fire and fury in North Korea, but I see what you're saying. He hasn't
gone the opposite way now.
He hasn't.
And his advice on that came from Mattis, by the way, about moving ships into the the South China Sea and so forth.
Yeah, well, Mattis he understands what's going on with China, and he's trying to get us back into the South China Sea. But I think Mattis has been pumping the brakes on a lot of the stupidity. But you're right. Trump has not been going around trying to start World War III like a lot of us were afraid of him doing.
But I think. But that was the fear with Ronald Reagan. They were afraid that Ronald Reagan was going to start World War III, and Ronald Reagan did not get us into any conflicts. As a matter of fact, the more progressive the president, the more likely the conflict we've gotten into in the past 105 years.
That's an interesting comment, and I mean you're not wrong if you look at what during the Clinton administration.
Wilson, he kept us out of war. Into Europe we went. FDR, into Europe we went. And Japan. Truman, into Korea.
Because
LBJ, into Vietnam.
The more progressive you are ideologically, the more likely you are to have this belief that we need to spread democracy all over the world and make the rest of the world look like us. It's like this ideological fallacy that these presidents and just people in general have, is that we feel like we need to make the rest of the world look more like America. And that's just one a facet, a cornerstone of that ideology. And it's not to say that they're the only ones. I mean, George W. Bush obviously had his mind captured by those types of people.
Which is why, as we've said on the show before, bringing a John Bolton into this administration, it kind of echoes those things of why there was a huge base of people who weren't big supporters of the Bush family in general, and they were like, Trump is going to be different.
I thought
Bolton is as status quo as it gets.
Yeah.
You're never going to have an administration that's absent of personalities from previous administrations.
Sure.
Or
but I just think Mattis is so well-liked. I don't want to see him pushed out.
No, I haven't been following. I haven't been following whether or not I have not seen anything that says he's, being pushed out.
Yeah. We'll see what happens there.
I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm just saying I haven't,
And then I wanted to get into this article as well. I want to make sure we talk about this. This is on the News Rep right now, written by Stavros, out of San Diego, California. I'm going to read the whole article because it's really short. A second Navy SEAL has been charged with war crimes on the alleged killing of an Islamic State prisoner in Iraq last year. As the ranking officer on the ground, Lieutenant Jake Portier is accused of covering up another SEAL's war crimes. Special Operations Chief Edward Eddie Gallagher has been accused of stabbing to death an ISIS detainee. More specifically, Lieutenant Portier faces an Article 32 hearing for dereliction of duty. Although the SEAL officer was not present at the alleged execution, he is accused of not reporting Gallagher's actions up the chain of command. Lieutenant Portier was the platoon leader of Chief Gallagher. An Article 32 hearing is a requirement before a general court-martial is adjourned. The hearing determines whether there is sufficient evidence in proceed to the next phase. According to investigators from the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, Lieutenant Portier and Chief Gallagher are not the sole targets of the war crimes probe. It appears that the NCIS is investigating more than a dozen SEALs in the leadership of the Naval Special Warfare Group 1, which was responsible for addressing any war crime allegations. I guess I don't need to get into the rest, but I mean, you've spoken about before that this has been a ongoing problem with the SEALs, with specifically SEAL Team 6. So
yeah, I don't have any particular insights or insider knowledge on this specific case. It'll be interesting to see how it turns out, though. There was word leaking out that the investigation was ongoing because they were thinking of charging additional SEALs with what had happened out there. This is number two. We'll see what else happens, though.
I have not been following this story. I've been wrapped up in this midterm election.
It's pretty new, too. This is not, I don't think there's a whole lot out yet.
This is still ongoing. And then the other one is the alleged murder of Staff Sergeant Melgar in Mali. by the two,
which you covered in depth.
Dev group operators, and we're waiting on that to go to
nobody
go
wants
to trial.
That. I only lightly followed that one. You know, one thing about my program is if a topic is not a debatable topic that I have an ability to debate myself, that it's not that we ignore these things on purpose. It's just that what's to debate? If you have something like SEALs are accused of killing a Green Beret sergeant, well, that's obviously awful. And I think nobody who's a veteran or a civilian wants to believe that something like that would possibly happen, that something would happen within the ranks of the special operations community that would lead to I know it's a sick term, friendly fire, but not even a friendly fire, like it's an accident, like a purposeful
fragging,
killing.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that, as more comes out, it'll be covered on the website. So that's at thenewsrep.com. Stavros did that article. I'm sure there's going to be more that comes out. Before we get out of here, I do want to, of course, mention what we have going on at Crate Club. As I've talked about, people were really anticipating that NFW Watch collaboration, which you now have.
Yeah.
That is in the current premium crate. We have different tiers of membership depending on how prepared you want to be. And gift options are available as well. So Scott Whitner from the Loadout Room and the guys are currently working on bringing you 100% custom products in 2019. Everything from sunglass cases to EDC bags and other manly products. It's a club for men, by men. You can check that all out.
Manly.
At crateclub.us. Once again, that's crateclub.us. If you're a dog owner, we have Kuna right now. We've partnered with them. They have a team of trained canine handlers picking out a box for your dog each month of healthy treats and training aids. It's custom built for your dog's size and age, so it doesn't matter what type of dog you have. It's custom built for them. The products are U.S. sourced, all natural, and they not only promote a healthy diet, but they also promote being active with your dog. So whether we're talking a pit bull, chihuahua, doesn't matter what type of dog, this is what you're looking for. You can see all of that at kuna.dog. That's CUNA.DOG. Subscribe now. And then, of course, as I've been mentioning every show, the Spec Ops channel. You could watch all of those inside the team rooms. I know some people have been wondering, like, where are those? Those
you
are
know
now
my favorite is inside the team room, Green Berets.
Hosted by yourself.
I'll say that. You had a really...
That's a pretty good one.
You had a great host there. That guy was great.
He was spot on.
And I don't think it's in there. Remember... Jim West's story about a certain,
we had to bleep Terry Shepard because he just said it. He just said it.
Yeah, I don't know if I think we ended up censoring who he spoke about. Right, I don't know, but there's nonetheless.
Do you have
great
a bleep functions? I'll say it right now.
It's I wouldn't risk it right now, but it's the Spec Ops channel. Check that out right now, specopschannel.com. $4.99 a month. That's for a limited time, 50% off your membership. We have the app developed by Chris, who does all of our stuff. So we have the SOFREP radio app now. I actually just got an email. I was checking the emails today of where is the radio show on the NewsRep app? We have a SOFREP radio app. And, I mean, the show has been getting more listens than ever. Now that we're on, Spotify, we're doing these YouTube videos. It's just great to see. We're hitting a larger demo than we ever have before. I'm always checking the statistics and, especially the Dale Comstock interview, not even 400, the one before that got a huge amount of listens. If you haven't listened to it, the last one with Dale Comstock, he's like, he said this himself, so I can say it. He's like, I hope the next time I'm on with you guys, I'm not live via Skype from a prison cell.
Oh, wow.
He's the one who, I was like, what's the response that you've gotten from that episode? And he was like, well, my lawyer called me, and he was like, shut your mouth, stop talking on podcasts and all this stuff. So I'm thankful that he's, willing to come on with us.
Well, on that note, about that specific subject, I saw that the French have filed something with the international criminal courts to charge Australians who have been fighting in Yemen with the Emiratis. And one of them is the guy I mentioned in my article about Yemen, Mike Hindmarsh. At least he's mentioned in the article I wrote about the ICC, that they're specifically looking at all of these Australian dudes who have gone over there to fight in Yemen as contractors, or they seconded themselves into the Emirati military. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
And do we have any idea what the punishment is going to be for these guys?
We don't even know if it's going to go to trial.
And then also, forgive my ignorance on this one. You know, Dale, his explanation was these are allies of ours. Are they allies of Australia?
I mean, they're part of notionally or I guess part of the International Coalition Against ISIS. Is that it?
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think that's going to hold up in court.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm looking forward to more articles on that. But once again, the vet ride is being held this coming Sunday. If you're listening, you know, I know people listen weeks later, but if you're listening this week, November 11th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Emmett O'Looney's, 210 West 50th Street.
The ride starts, rally. Yeah. The broadcast is 1 to 4 p.m. The ride is rallying up at from 9, 11, kickstands up, and then they hit I-80 West for 46 and 3 in the Lincoln Tunnel.
Yeah, because actually I'm thinking Emmett O'Looney's probably isn't even open at 9 a.m. on Sunday. No. So when should people start getting there? Noon?
Yeah, you know, 11 o'clock they open for lunch, and if you're the unlucky guy that I am, before you even eat breakfast, Jim West makes you do two double shots of Jameson whiskey on an empty stomach, and then you have to go on the air.
I've never seen Jim drink hard liquor before.
He made me do it.
He'll probably be there again. I mean, he's around. So anything else that you want to get to before we wrap this up, man?
All right. Well, thank you, Andrew.
Thanks for coming in, as always. I mean, I always appreciate seeing you. It's so funny in that, like, you know, for the audience that doesn't know, me, you, Mike Binns spent pretty much 5 hours a day with each other for a good, I'm trying to think how long, 6 years or so. And, I mean, it's just, it's been a different dynamic in my life.
I know, you're all grown up now.
I'm not going to lie, though.
I remember you as a college kid, all grown up.
That's true. I met you while I was in college, before the election of Barack Obama.
Which makes me feel really old.
And you basically breastfed this kid, Andrew. Yeah. You suckled him from birth.
I've said it before, and I definitely don't mind saying it again. When I was in college, I was, you know, taking radio class and stuff and driving around the parking lot, having to go to, you know, class. And I would have Andrew show on before I ever met him and, you know, knew him personally. And I remember, like, showing up late for class because I was too captivated by what he was talking about. It's true. I got
Thank you.
Then when John Mullen, who works at WRHU, he was like, we have, you know, two guys coming for the election night coverage. He was like, Alex Bennett and this Cow guy, something cow, like Andrew Wokow. And he was like, yeah. And so I was excited to meet you. And then from there, like, it's just one of those interesting things, man. I was working at Sirius because I was interning at Fangoria originally, but like your show was a show I really wanted to work on, and I made it happen. And I think it just is one of those things. If you really work hard at something, you really want to make something happen, you can make it happen. Like working for you, getting to do stuff on air with you, that was totally a dream for me. And we get to still hang out, have you on. The website is WellCalMajority.com.
At WellCalMajority on Twitter.
And check out the CRTV show. I'll be honest, I see the clips that you post on Twitter. I see a lot of the stuff that you do of, what is it, like 20 questions or 30 questions? At
19 questions. We're so hip we do 19. And it was, you know, it was a way, I am not somebody in this business that's so threatened by people trying to do what I do because, you know, it's weird. I remember being the new guy, and I remember one of my first attempts at getting into radio out of college. I went to my home radio station, WBAB, out in Long Island, and I was short. You know, I had been on this 50,000 watt station in Florida while I was in college, you know, not college radio, real radio. And I went in to hand in my demo tape, and the woman took it from me, and I could hear the ping of the garbage can before I even got out the door. Like I heard the ping of the, you know, the, like, you know, hitting the, you know, the old cassettes and the, yeah, I heard it hit the garbage can before I even walked out the door. And, you know, when I was an intern, even before that, I remember saying, if I ever get anywhere in this business, I'm never going to treat people around me like I'm being treated right now. And that person and I worked together and we've made peace over that. And he's a nice guy now, but he was in a tough position then. So, you know, when it comes to making opportunities for other people, one of the things I want to do, a lot of the people at CRTV are brand new at this. And I thought, why not, you know, when they're guests, introduce them to, when, you know, to people that know me better and, you know, kind of give the backstory on them and get to know them a little bit better. Because, you know, look, this business is, it's full of egos. There are people that are threatened by people trying to come up in the business, even though they came up in the business themselves. They feel the need to pull the ladder up. I'm not one of those people. So if I can, you know, help any of the careers of the younger people trying to do what I was doing 15, 16, 17 years ago, I'm all about that.
And that first job that those kids have working for you has such a big impression on them for the rest of their careers.
Well, I mean, we're talking about some of the younger personalities coming on my show as a guest. And then I go, oh, we have a second segment we do called 19 Questions. And we just kind of, you know, I ask them, you know, a series of.
You've done some of them with some high profile people.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Bowling. Bowling was one of the first ones.
Yeah.
But we really, really designed it more to get to know some of the younger people. I mean, Deneen's done it.
Yeah.
You know, some of the people that you know from Fox or formerly of Fox.
I saw one of them was, I don't remember that his name, but he kind of became famous on YouTube. And I guess now he's on CRTV. He's like a big
Crowder.
No, not Crowder. He kind of seems like a military type dude. I don't know.
Oh, Graham Allen. Yeah, he started ranting on YouTube, and they gave him a show.
What is his background? Is he a military guy?
Yeah, Army. I don't know all about his background, but I know he was in the Army. And I know he deployed. But just to the business end of it, not that I'm don't know how many budding radio or podcasters you have listening. That you know this business, you've worked at SiriusXM, you've worked in around terrestrial people. You know that there's a very guarded business. It is hard to find people that are encouraging of others,
yeah.
Especially young people trying to break in. There is a certain level of feeling. And look, don't get me wrong. There are times I feel that way, you know. But I feel like, oh my God, is the world changing? Am I being left behind? Is, you know, who's all this new crop of people? But I don't think it gets you anywhere to be a hindrance to someone else's career.
Yeah.
You know, if you can help them, I think it's a good thing.
Well, the difference to me now with podcasting is the fact that you don't need that personal, like, give you the approval. You're not working for a big company. And there are people who come out of nowhere and make an audience for themselves, including, I'm forgetting his name.
You?
No. I'm talking about the guy that you had on, the Army guy.
Graham. Yeah, Graham.
But he wasn't working for a company. He just was ranting on Facebook,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, YouTube. Yeah. Yep.
So.
Well, the world has changed.
It sure has.
It definitely has. I mean, I do think there's something to be said for, like, learning your craft a little and working for a bigger company. But, I mean, podcasting, YouTube, it has definitely changed the game. I remember, I remember Tommy Lahren, like, before she was Tommy Lahren, emailing us for, like, you to come on and Brandon to come on. And she was doing it out of, like, a tiny little studio. Here, and now
here's,
she's a
here's
huge
the truth
name,
about
you know?
This. You could put the smartest thing on YouTube, right? You could sit down.
But if you're a hot chick,
I'm just going to say that. You know, yeah. my wife is all into this stuff called bar class now, and you know, because you know she searches out, you know, some of these bar moves and things. There are some odd things that have come up in my YouTube feed. I'm like, what is this thing called a bikini haul? And it's like, how does this girl who's literally just in her bedroom trying on bathing suits and giving reviews of them getting 2 million views? Whereas, like, you know, you can have the smartest person sit down and explain, you know, the origins of the universe, and it's going to get like 3,000 views. So you are up against that if you're trying to stake your claim in the world of YouTube or Facebook Lives or podcasting.
Very true. Very true. All right. Well, great to do this as always, man. And wrapping things up here. Check out StopUpRadio.com.
The need for speed.
Yeah. Like I
you
said.
You lost that love and feeling.
We originally
They're
were using.
Talk to me, well, Goose.
We originally were just using the Top Gun theme, and I remember being like, Brandon, we're going to get flagged. We need to just get rid of this. So, John Burns, BYRNES.
Let's all go play volleyball without our shirts on.
I was like, just give me something that's pretty much the Top Gun theme, but different. So, that's what this is. All right. Thanks as always, guys. Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it, man.
Been listening to Soft Rep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter @SoftRep Radio.